Part 3. The End of Time Management. Chapter 8. The Time Economy. Takeaway. When time was created by the Big Bang 13.8 billion years ago, the universe had a past, present, and future for the first time. Measuring time first became important during the Industrial Revolution, when factory owners needed their workers to arrive on time. Today, in the knowledge economy, if you want to become more productive, managing your time should take a back seat to how you manage your energy and attention. The beginning of time. Since the Big Bang, the universe has had a very distinct past, present, and future. It gave birth to, in sequence, the first nuclei, atoms, galaxies, and stars, and then closest to home, our own solar system. Today, an inconceivably large number of galaxies exist in the known universe, approximately 100 billion of them, by most estimates, many of which are similar in size and shape to our own Milky Way galaxy. To me, the most fascinating part of our cosmic story isn't the sheer number of galaxies, though. It's that these galaxies are not standing still. As time marches forward, the galaxies are expanding farther and farther away from one another. Time is a way of cataloging and labeling exactly when something happens relative to other things. As long as there are sequences of events to order, there will be time. Or, to put it another way, without a sequence of events that have a distinct past, present, and future, time wouldn't exist. When time became important. If you were around before the Industrial Revolution ended, in the early 1800s, you wouldn't have measured time down to the minute, not only because you didn't have the technology to do so, but also because you didn't need to. Before the Industrial Revolution, measuring time wasn't as important, and most of us worked on the farm, where we had way fewer deadlines, meetings, and events to sequence than we have today. In fact, until the first mass-market machine-made watches were produced in the 1850s, timepieces were unattainable by pretty much anyone except for the super rich. And most of us charted the day's progression by looking at the sun. Because we didn't measure time with a clock, we would speak about events relative to other events. In the Malay language, there is even the phrase pisan zapra, which roughly translates to about the time it takes to eat a banana. But by the mid-1800s, technology continued to accelerate, and a pivotal shift began to take place that made time a lot more relevant. Railroads began to expand across the United States and Canada, as well as across many other parts of the world. As they expanded, an interesting conundrum arose. No two cities kept the same time. After all, why would they? Time was consistent within each individual city, and since cities weren't connected to one another, there was no reason for two cities to sync up. As railroads continued to connect individual cities, though, there were often dozens of time zones in a single state, which led to all sorts of problems for the railroad companies. After several accidents and near misses, the railroads had finally had it and decided that the sun was no longer cutting it as a timekeeper. That's when, in 1883, railroad operators teamed up to define four simple time zones across the United States and Canada. These time zones were originally created for the railroads to use internally. To make matters even more complicated, up until 1883, the railroads themselves had 53 different time zones they used to track their trains. Across the United States and Canada, railroads switched to using just four time zones at exactly noon on November 18, 1883. 35 years later, in 1918, the United States officially went from using hundreds of time zones to using just four, and time zones were codified into federal law. I find this fascinating. Even though humans have been around for 200,000 years, we've only been living by the clock for the last 175. It's a good thing for time zones, too. Try to imagine how difficult it would be to coordinate a meeting or get everyone in one place for an event if every city kept different time. In the early 1900s, around the same time the time zones were codified into law, we were in the midst of two other crucial shifts in North America. More and more people began working in factories, and labor unions across the United States began fighting for and winning shorter 8-hour workdays. Within the span of a few decades, we went from selling goods we produced ourselves to helping create mass-produced goods in factories, which also meant we began to trade our time for a paycheck. While time has been ticking on for billions of years, we only began measuring it down to the minute after the Industrial Revolution because we finally had a reason to. Time was money, and there was a direct correlation between how many minutes and hours we worked and how much we produced. We'd always worked for money, but it was in the factory era that how long we worked began to be exactly measured. Almost overnight, time management had become an essential part of living in a post-industrial world, and the time economy was born. Today, of course, you're already familiar with what happens next. In the same way that we went from working on farms to working in factories, since the 1950s, many of us have gone from working in factories to working in offices. Over the last 60 years, manufacturing in the United States went from accounting for 28% of the country's GDP to just 12%. And this shrinkage happened in the face of more and more automation. Over the same time period, the sector of the U.S. economy that has grown by far the most has been the professional and businesses services sector, a fancy name for the chunk of the economy that includes every single high-tech, engineering, legal, consulting, and accounting company. Companies like Apple, Google, Boeing, General Electric, McKinsey & Company, and Deloitte. As the manufacturing industry has wilted over the last six decades, this sector has tripled in size. When we transitioned into the time economy, we began to trade our time for a paycheck. But as we have transitioned into the knowledge economy, we've begun to trade so much more than just our time. Most people who work non-factory jobs trade some combination of their time, attention, energy, skills, knowledge, social intelligence, network, and ultimately their productivity for a paycheck. Today, time is no longer money. Productivity is money. A crazy idea. This begs the question, what does time management look like in the knowledge economy? I'm going to present you with a crazy idea that will begin to make more and more sense the deeper we dive into this section of the book. If you want to become more productive, managing your time should take a back seat to how you manage your energy and attention. Don't get me wrong, time is still important. We don't live in some hocus-pocus world where time doesn't exist. But it's simply not as important as it once was when the majority of us worked in factories where our traditional views of managing our time arose. Ever since there have been events to chronicle, time has ticked on, and there has been no way to stop it. For as long as we can predict, time will continue to tick on at the same rate. But what actually fluctuates on a day-to-day basis is how much energy and attention you have. In the knowledge economy, that's what makes or breaks how productive you are. And more important, it's something you can actually control. Time is a necessity of work and of nature. But as far as productivity is concerned, it should merely be the backdrop against which you work. Take, for example, the largest relic from the time economy, the 9-to-5 workday. In the time economy, the whole 9-to-5 idea made a lot of sense. We had a lot of machines and people to coordinate. Time was money, and running an efficient factory meant getting machines and employees in the same place at once. It made sense to pay people to work by the hour because the work performed by employees was not all that different from the work performed by machines. Today, when productivity is about what you accomplish and not how much you produce, a 9-to-5 workday makes as much sense as diligently tracking your time out on the farm. After all, what if your biological prime time falls when you're not working, and you have the most energy from 6 to 9 a.m., or from 7 to 11 p.m.? Or what if you have trouble focusing because you're trying to multitask on a million things at once? Or what if you're constantly bombarded by distractions and interruptions? Time is still important, and we likely won't go back to comparing how long something takes to eating a banana anytime soon. But today, time is just one part of three in the productivity equation. Working smarter. I find it fascinating that it's impossible to talk about managing your time without also talking about how you manage your attention and energy. If it sounds to you like I'm hitting the crack pipe, consider this notion. When we schedule time for something, what we're actually doing is simply deciding when we will invest our attention and energy into the task. That's where time management should fit into the productivity equation. Scheduling time for something is really just a way of creating attentional and energy boundaries around a task. And for that reason, your time, attention, and energy are inseparable. Managing your time becomes important only after you understand how much energy and focus you will have throughout the day and define what you want to accomplish. Unless you're an entrepreneur or a CEO, you likely don't have complete control over your time. If you work with more than one person, meetings are inevitable, and so is having to manage your time, at least to some extent. Since you don't have complete control over the sequence of events that make up your workday, and few do, it's essential that you carve out time for coordinating with other people. But unless you work in a factory, you at least have some modicum of control over your time and over what you work on. Some days I schedule my entire day, and I've found that doing so makes me incredibly productive, especially when I form a strong intention about what I'm going to get done. But I only ever plan out my day after I account for how much attention and energy I will have, and most important, what I intend to accomplish. During my project, I learned to work smarter instead of just harder. It has helped me accomplish things like narrate the very audiobook you're listening to right now. It's not that I'm smarter or more talented, it's that I learned the hard way how to step out of the time economy and into the knowledge economy to become more productive. Here are a few of the best ways I discovered to do that.